Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Standing Room Only podcast. Yes, I'm your host, Ben Standing. And I cover the Washington Commanders for The Athletic. It's Sunday evening here in the DMV. Hope all is well. Hope you guys had a nice weekend. Decent weather, I would say. And of course, we had the NCAA tournament on. NC State, unbelievable. If you're old like me and you remember the 1983 run, it is eerily familiar how this is going down so far. I'd be very leery if I was the other teams in the Final Four. We wrapped up last week during a busy week, of course, the final pro days of the main quarterback prospects, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, Michael Penix Jr. So we're going to obviously continue to talk about the quarterbacks and where things go here for the Commanders. So I'll get to some of that in a moment, including a look at the overall depth chart and where some of these draft picks may specifically fill in. But as for today's guest interview, our pal Shield Kapadia from The Ringer, formerly my teammate at The Athletic, joins me. Shield handles The Ringer's free agent lists and the best available and all that good stuff. So he and I spoke and went through all of Washington's moves. Now, this was a week ago, I would say we spoke. Just so much other things were happening last week. I just delayed the interview. So yes, we didn't get into a couple of the late moves, but I think we got the majority of everything that went down, and we talked about some other league matters as well, and just sort of the NFC East as a whole. He does a lot of focus on the Philadelphia Eagles. So we got into all that and more, and we'll get to it in a moment here on the podcast. Of course, make sure you subscribe, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you do your podcasting. And if you missed it over the last week or so, I did a full first round mock draft on The Athletic last week, as well as recapping what we heard from Quinn Peters, Harris, and more at the owners meeting. So with regards to the quarterbacks, you know, what we're waiting on now is to see when we hear about these, top 30 visits. Each team has just that. They can bring in 30 players for individual meetings if they want to do, you know, some sort of a workout. For the quarterbacks, it'll probably be a lot of work with film on the board, just getting to know them a little bit better, take them out for a meal, all that kind of stuff. So we'll wait and see when all that takes place. Yeah, obviously the first round is April 25th. I would imagine it's all sort of sooner than later, but you can even get some last minute meetings literally. But I would imagine that they will want to work out most of this sooner than later. And of course, it's not just these positions, a lot more. I didn't compile a list today, but I will do my best to work on that, over the next few days to give you some more names for sure. We're going to keep playing this game every week, every episode about what do I think. And you know, I will tell you what I know as soon as I can. As I've stated repeatedly, I just think that it has been a very quiet QB search, just like it was a very quiet college or coach search. I was at my cousin's house over the weekend, and the parents are out of town, and their two teenage boys, who are very, very much into sports, were there, and they, and one of them, the older one, as a senior in high school, he said to me, hey, so I hear the Commanders are interested in Jaden Daniels. And I'm like, sure. And he goes, but I mean, like, that's who they're going to take is what I heard. I'm like, well, where'd you hear that? And he told me, and you know, whatever, I'll leave that part out. But I was like, look, I'm not saying somebody can't be right, but there's, you know, between Jaden Daniels, Drake May, and J.J. McCarthy, if we're assuming Caleb Williams goes one, somebody will be right if they mention, you know, one of those names above all. But at the moment, I maintain that there's just no real information out there that to me would truly suggest much of anything. So, you know, I've had Jaden Daniels going two in my various mock drafts. From a style standpoint, he might be the most logical one to pair with what we view as a Cliff Kingsbury, you know, sort of wide open, fast paced offense. But of course, Drake May played in an air raid scheme in college. Cliff Kingsbury comes out of the air raid scheme. Is that going to be the differentiator? Or is the fact that just Drake May has the sort of that prototype size for that you'd want in a quarterback, basically 6'4", you know, good build, he's athletic. Is that the answer? Or does J.J. McCarthy serve it up as the guy Washington wants? Yeah, I've heard multiple analysts suggest that, like, if you were a coach in the Shanahan tree, that J.J. McCarthy's ability to read defenses quickly, to throw over the middle, throw accurately, you know, and he's got some functional athleticism, you know, that all of that would work. And Adam Peters, of course, is just coming out of the 49ers with Kyle Shanahan's offense. Dan Quinn had Kyle Shanahan as his OC in Atlanta, but Cliff Kingsbury doesn't really tie into any of that, and he's the OC. So how does that factor into any of this? It is a very fascinating discussion and debate. I'll have more on this later or this week, but there just doesn't, to me at least, it seems to be a very still, I won't say it's an open race because they may already know, but in terms of like how to interpret everything, I just think it is very interesting. I can see how anybody could just looking at the information we have, some I just laid out, others, other information I didn't get to, like, you know, mobility and, you know, things along those lines. Not to mention, perhaps there's a component where Jaden Daniels, with over 50 starts, is more able, we would think, to start day one. Maybe that's appealing to this group, versus where Drake May, J.J. McCarthy, there may be more of an inclination to have those guys, you know, hang out for most of, if not their entire rookie seasons, to watch and learn and develop. If that's the case, then maybe that's a difference maker for Daniels. But again, I just think this is a really fun, fascinating debate, as long as we're debating it with information that we have available to us. And as far as I can see, I don't see that others would. But again, we will see. We've got a few more weeks to go with all this. I did want to get into the depth chart, though, just briefly. As some of you who follow me on Twitter or X at Ben Standing have seen, you know, during this free agency period, I've been like just doing my own, you know, back of the napkin type depth chart on a Google Doc. And I'm not trying to do it like, oh, I think this person is going to be ahead of them on the depth chart. It's just more of a, here's a broad look at the pieces now on the roster. I put them in, you know, first team, second team, third team, kind of, but that's, you know, don't focus on that if you see it later. It's just more about, you know, what have they added? What positions have they added? And then looking at it, I had not previously included the specific number of the draft picks other than saying number two, the number two pick would be at quarterback. But I was looking at this list and thinking, all right, let's do that here. I'll obviously have mock drafts later, with specific names, but this one's just putting in the numbers. So as we know, Washington has two picks in the second round, 36 and 40. The positions I think that they would make sense, like they could obviously take almost any position. You wouldn't think defensive tackle for her, but, or probably not even linebacker at this point, but you know, realistically they could take almost any other position. Well, not quarterback either. At any of these picks. And, you know, if they like the player, they like the talent, you can probably justify it for the most part. But the positions I think that make the most sense for that second round, first off, you got left tackle, right? They re-signed Cornelius Lucas. Trent Scott's around. Adam Peters said at the meetings in Orlando that he'd be good if those were their tackles. I don't know if I completely buy that. Lucas is only signed to a one-year deal. And, you know, he's been a very, very, very solid swing tackle for these guys. I think he's been very good. And if he has to start the first handful of games, I think they'll be fine. But long-term play, I just, based on what we've seen so far, I don't see it. Who knows what to make of Braden Daniels, their fourth-round pick last year, who sat out the whole season with a rotator cuff injury after a tough summer. I don't even know how to factor him in. So taking a tackle would make a ton of sense. In the first-round mock that I just did, I traded into the first round for Washington to pick 30. They'll have a chance to grab a tackle there at 36 if they want, but there may be a tier, they may be dropping down a tier, which is why I moved up. But I would say, tackle would make a ton of sense in round two, if not the very first pick for Washington in round two. Then, of course, you have the defensive end. As we've discussed, they've got a rotation now between Dorrance Armstrong, Cleveland Farrell, Dante Fowler. We can add in K.J. Henry and Andre Jones and Jalen Harris. And, again, not saying that that's, we're just talking about sort of a combination of getting by next year. But then there's also the long-term play. And other than the fact that Armstrong signed a three-year deal and K.J. Henry, showed some spunk last season as a rookie, we wouldn't be sitting here saying, boy, this group is good to go. They do need more talent. Now, put a pin in that. I think cornerback for me would be the next position that I think would make a lot of sense at one of these spots because, you've got last year's first-round pick, Emmanuel Forbes, obviously a tough rookie year, but, there's talent. You've got Benjamin St. Juste, who's basically been a starter-slash-high-rotation guy for his first 3 years, and then they just signed Michael Davis, who's been a longtime starter with the Chargers, as a another corner. So that's like your top three, and then you have your, Christian Holmes, James Pierre, and others that you can. Pierre's basically a special teams guy, but nonetheless, Noah Egbiani, the guy they signed from Dallas. But here's the thing: if you look ahead to next year, St. Juste and Davis will be free agents, leaving Emmanuel Forbes, and now you're hoping, obviously, that he improves significantly. I think corner is going to be kind of a bigger deal here. And if you look at the options, guys like Kool-Aid McKinstry, I think has a realistic chance to be there. I mean, he could go late in the first round, of course, but I think there's a realistic chance that he is available. Kamari Lassiter from Georgia is another guy. And here's the other thing I was thinking about. Next year, if I'm being realistic, it is probably likely that Washington has a top 10 pick again next year. I mean, things would have to go swimmingly well this year in a variety of ways for that to probably not be the case. I believe the current odds, Kevin Sheehan and I talked about this the other day, the current odds of the top 10 list the current odds of the win totals for next year, the Commanders would be in the bottom 10. So let's just say that that's part of your long-term thinking. That may be where you get your defensive end prospect, right? Rookie defensive ends, they can come in and be an impact, but now you're talking about a higher-end prospect than what we're talking about here early in the second round. But if you took one in the early second round, I'm not saying you couldn't therefore take it with one in the top 10, but maybe it's a little bit more complicated at that point. We just went through some of this where the team is investing a lot in sort of one position. So I'm not saying that would derail me from taking a defensive end here, but it's conceivable that a cornerback would be higher on their board and therefore would make more sense. So part of me almost wants to put cornerback here instead of edge. I could kind of go either way, but for our purposes, I did go defensive end and then corner as Washington's number 78 pick. Now you're saying, wait a minute, there's one in between number 67. I went for a receiver here. Other than Austin Ekeler, they really just haven't added much in terms of the way of playmaking on offense. And with Ekeler, we don't know where he's at. There's also a need to truly replace Curtis Samuel, and I think they need some height there as well. So pick number 67 in this draft, I think, is where you can get receiver. Receivers tend to be pretty deep every single year these days, so they shouldn't have an issue there. If they think it's deep enough, you can even wait a bit longer, but I wanted to get on the board with a receiver. So 67, I think, is where I could see receiver. And then we got 78, as I mentioned, going to corner. And then we have number 100. I went with offensive line. I went specifically with a guard. Now, Nick Allegretti, one of their free agents who signed more than a one-year deal, I guess you would say right now we pencil him in as the left guard. But, you know, again, he wasn't starting for the Chiefs. He did obviously have very, very good performance in the postseason when he needed to fill in, and then he had a heroic performance in the Super Bowl playing with a busted elbow. So all props to him. He seems like a fun guy as we spoke with him. And you also have Ricky Stromberg, who now with Tyler Biadasz, you know, Stromberg may need to be a guard here. And maybe he competes with Allegretti, or maybe he's just, just the top reserve at both spots. So maybe if that's the case, you don't worry about guard and you go tackle, seeing as Andrew Wiley is the right tackle. Again, even if we're saying we're taking a left tackle at 36, I don't think it's crazy to think you take another one. Andrew Wiley could potentially be guard depth if you have another tackle that works. So I wouldn't have an issue. So pick 100, we're just saying offensive line. Whether it's guard or a tackle, I'm saying offensive line. Okay? Now we've got three picks left. Number 139, I will have tight end. Now, Washington now has John Bates, Zach Ertz, Armani Rogers coming off his injury, Cole Turner. None of that is particularly exciting. I think John Bates is a totally viable blocking tight end, like a number two. You know, we know the deal with Zach Ertz. He was a Pro Bowler earlier in his career. Injuries and just age, I think, have caught up to him a bit. But Cliff Kingsbury had him in Arizona. Clearly, he likes him. So we'll see what Zach Ertz has left. We'll see if Armani Rogers can continue to develop as he showed as that rookie learning a new position, but then he tears his Achilles last summer and never gets on the field. And then Cole Turner, you know, it's been a pretty disappointing two seasons for him. Maybe a new staff can get something more out of him. He's going to have to get more functional strength to get out on the field because his blocking is not particularly impressive. And I think just maybe, you know, I don't want to say tougher, like he's not tough, but I just mean like, you know, make more of an impact out there on the field, whether it's a pass catcher in traffic or on the line. So I just think they need to get another tight end. Now, this is one where, you know, if you told me they're going to grab somebody on day two, sure. But, you know, this is not considered to be a very good tight end class. You know, maybe a Cade Stover from Ohio State you can grab on day two. But, you know, they have a bunch of other positions. And, you know, in Dallas, you know, it wasn't, not that this means how anything would go, or even San Francisco, but like, you know, George Kittle was a day three pick. I think we can't put everything back to what Peters or Quinn did before, but I'm just saying, I don't know that either have really, maybe I'm forgetting somebody, but I don't think either is coming from a place where they really, really, you know, put a lot of investment in tight end. So I think that pick number 139 could be a good spot for a tight end. Number 152, this is in the fifth round. I went linebacker. Obviously, they spent good on Frankie Louvu and Bobby Wagner, or at least on Louvu, and they add Wagner, who's going to be a starter this year. You still have Jamin Davis. But Jamin Davis, if they don't pick up his options on the last year of his deal, Bobby Wagner signed a one-year deal. I don't know exactly who would be the backup to Wagner right now. So number 152, I'm looking at a linebacker, an inside linebacker as a direct replacement for Wagner next year if he doesn't return. Somebody, the veteran, future Hall of Famer, can mentor and so on. So 152, I went with a linebacker. Leading up to number 222, their last pick in the seventh round. You could have a lot of fun with this. You could go in a bunch of different ways. I wonder if, you know, what do they think about the return game now that the kickoff rules have changed as such? That position becomes really more important. If you missed it last week, I spoke with Jory Epstein, a senior writer for Yahoo, about a bunch of the rule changes and the impact of the kickoff rule in particular. So you could check that out if you missed it. But I didn't do that. I went with another quarterback. I did this in my first Commanders only mock draft, Keaton Slovis out of BYU. I really liked him when he was at USC, and then, you know, it just didn't quite develop for him in terms of, you know, progressing as a prospect. And now, you know, he may even be a UDFA. We'll see. But the reason I like the quarterback there is, look, unless they really like Jake Fromm, who's, you know, been on the practice squad here previously, they're going to need potentially a backup quarterback next year, right? Marcus Mariota is a free agent after this year, so who knows? It's, you know, we can't even speculate that far away. But if he's gone and Fromm is just the practice squad guy, they're going to need another shot at possibly somebody being the backup quarterback. Not to mention, you know, I never have an issue taking swings late in the draft on a quarterback, so that's where I went. But of course, you know, you want a fourth running back, you want returner type, whatever position, whatever, regardless of what his natural position is. I think that's something. That's how I would go right now, quarterback in the seventh round. Could they package these picks and move around the board? Sure, of course. Again, I had them going in the first round, first round mock draft. I had them trading back into the first round, so all that could absolutely work. But you know, for these purposes, I just didn't really do any of that. They could also, by the way, trade down if Penix or Nix is still on the board early second. You know, maybe it makes sense to take one of those second round picks, trade down, not even necessarily for more picks this year, but for some 2025 picks, get that haul rising a bit. So lots to consider, but that's kind of how I look at it right now. As we are here on, well, we are, I'm, as I'm talking to you, we're very close to getting to April 1st, April Fool's Day. I'm not making any jokes with anything I've said here, but, you know, we get to April 1st, April 25th is not that far away. All right, enough of that. Let's get to my insightful conversation with Sheil Kapadia from The Ringer, talking free agents, talking the Commanders roster, and everything else that's going on with this team here on the Standing Room Only podcast. All right, we're not winding down with free agency. There's still going to be moves coming, but obviously the pace has slowed a lot. So to try to help us get a feel for what's happened with Washington and elsewhere is our guy, Sheil Kapadia, of course, with The Ringer. He hosts, you got the Philly Special podcast. You got a lot of things going on over there that people should check out. How are you? I can imagine. I mean, I know it was crazy for us here in D.C. because the Commanders were making all the moves, but the league was. How was it last week when that pace just goes insane?
It was a weird one, Ben. We're Monday, we're used to stuff happening on Monday, but it felt like, I don't know what percentage it was. It felt at a higher pace the minute stuff opened up on Monday than it usually does, and then into Monday night and into Tuesday. And then by the time Wednesday rolled around, it was like, oh, there's not many guys left. But I always like this time of year. I like the off season. I like the trade arguments and free agency and all that stuff. So it's fun for me.
I love this time of year. I mean, obviously the games are fun and wild speculation can be a lot, but when you have informed or have the ability to have nuanced speculation and conversation, it can be so fun. That's why I like doing like mock drafts, because I don't care so much about the player, because none of us know. It's about what's the philosophy behind what a team is trying to accomplish and how do you get there and what's the best way to do it. And to tie that to free agency, obviously Washington was busy, but almost none of their deals were for a lot of money. But what it seemed to me is, like, if I said to you right now, what was the worst contract? I'm sure you have a couple thoughts, but there weren't any like, oh my Lord, how did somebody get paid 4 for $90 for that guy? It wasn't that. It was maybe more of, I don't really like that guy. But did it feel like the teams were more restrained this year with the spending?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think 5 years ago it was easier to make fun of teams for what in the world are you doing? So it was better for content, Ben, if I'm being quite honest.
Sure.
At that time, but yeah, you know, Calvin Ridley, that one caught my attention, and that wasn't even just because of the contract the Titans signed him. I think $23 million per year. If you would have told me a contending team did that, then I would have said, all right, they're taking a big swing. They feel like they got to go for it now. Calvin Ridley is probably, you know, what is he? Probably like a high-end number two receiver, and they want to overspend. I get it. But for the Titans to do that, that was one where I was like, all right, that is, you know, quite a head scratcher here for that team to be signing that player to that contract. So that was one that stood out. Leonard Williams with the Seahawks, I thought that was a pretty aggressive contract. I think they gave him over $21 million per year, where Leonard Williams is a fine player, a solid starter, but I was looking at what some of the other defensive tackles who are around 30 years old got on the open market, and it wasn't anything near that. So those are a couple that just came to mind. But yeah, I think you're right. For the most part, I looked at it, and most of the moves, you could say, all right, even like you said, I might not love it, but I could say, all right, that wasn't, you know, the most egregious thing in the world.
You mentioned the Leonard Williams thing. So he basically got, right, the same money he was making before, roughly, right? Because I know when I was looking at Jerron Payne and John Allen's contracts, like, he was always in that low 20 range. I think it's hard. People ask me, like, well, why didn't Washington just re-sign, like, Kendall Fuller or Cam Curl when their contracts ultimately weren't that high? And I'm like, well, in Curl's case, they had already moved on because he wanted to see the market. In Fuller's case, it's pretty hard to go back to the place you work and take a pay cut. And I wonder, do you think on some level, like a Leonard Williams, are like, well, we want to keep the guy, but we can't. It's not realistically, his ego is not going to say, I don't know him per se, but just in general, he's not going to come back for $16 million here. He might go somewhere else. So if we want him to back, this is how this works.
Yeah, sometimes a player will take a contract from another team that they wouldn't take from the team that they're currently with, which I think is what you're referring to. So it could be, I mean, listen, the league seems to love, again, I think Leonard Williams is a solid starter, but you saw it when, you know, the Giants trade for him from the Jets and then give him a monster deal. And the Seahawks trade for him, you know, from the Giants, and now they give him a monster deal. So teams obviously like him, and, you know, that's part of the fun of the job. Like you said, I can have opinions on what do I think this player is worth. And I do a thing on the Ringer in the summer where I do trade value rankings, you know, who are the guys who would get the most. And some of them I'm looking at now going, man, I was absolutely way off on that. And so it's a fun thing to try to project, but you never kind of know until a player becomes available. Like Brian Burns, I mean, I thought for sure, I'm like, the league loves Brian Burns. I know the league loves Brian Burns. He's going to get a first round pick, and then he gets a second and a fifth. And I thought the extension he got wasn't like otherworldly, where I was like, that would really prevent a team from, you know, giving up draft capital for him. So I got to take the L on that one. So you never know. It's timing. It's stuff that we might not be privy to. It's the market. It's where teams are at a certain point in time. And so, like I said, that's why it's fun to try to project that stuff.
Timing really does factor in so much. And to that end, you know, Cam Curl, you know, there hasn't been a lot like about Washington the past few years. He was like one of the, you know, bright lights, in part because he was a seventh round pick that turned into a 4-year starter. And there were conversations around here, you know, oh, should they tag him? Not necessarily recently, but like over the last year or so, should they tag him? Why aren't they extending him now? What's going on? Gets towards free agency. Well, I mean, they're going to sign him. It's going to be $12 million a year. Then it's going to be $10 million. And he ends up signing, you know, for basically around four and change. To whatever degree you were paying attention to him, how much do you think that was the league showing what they think of him, or how much was it about, hey, the safety market, teams just didn't have to spend because there were so many options out there?
Yeah, I think it's the only way you find out what a player's worth is when they hit the open market and you find out what is a team willing to pay them. So I always look at it that, like, that, you know, that you're worth what someone is willing to pay you in every industry, not just, you know, NFL players. And so I think it did speak to it a little bit. You know, maybe it was, you know, kind of his, I don't want to say lack of playmaking ability a little bit. You know, he's not somebody who had big time ball production, but yeah, I thought someone would look at that and say, all right, younger player, versatile, has good film, has been a starter, like let's take a shot on him. But those aren't necessarily the players, I guess, that teams are willing to really, like, aggressively overpay for. That's the kind of guy you say, all right, let the market settle down a little bit. And like you mentioned, there were a lot of safeties out there, like Xavier McKinney goes to the Packers on what was it, $17 million a year, and kind of sets the market, you know, for in terms of this year's free agency class. And then if you're a patient team like the Rams were, you kind of wait and you wait and you wait. And I think they got pretty good value there.
We'll get to more Washington in a second, but you are, you know, a guy who pays attention to the Eagles. And, you know, when we're discussing Washington over and over again here, got to see what the rest of the division is doing. On the surface, the Eagles got a bunch more. This is what they do, right? They get a bunch bigger names. They get Bryce Huff. They make some bold moves. What do you think of them? Because I think you talked about this in your new story that's up about your seven takeaways from the free agency, and it seemed like you were basically saying, hey, is this kind of a boom or bust situation?
Yeah, that's how I see it. I mean, I keep using that phrase boom or bust because I can talk myself into a scenario where you say, man, Saquon Barkley, AJ Brown, Devontae Smith, Jalen Hurts, new offensive coordinator, and Kellen Moore, like just on paper, a defensive coordinator, you know, on a Monday night, having to start his game planning for that group. Like that's hard. You know, I always like looking at teams in that respect. How hard are you to defend when other teams are looking at you? What numbers do they have to circle that we got to have a plan for this guy or we're going to be in trouble? And they have a lot of those guys with Saquon Barkley. So I could see a scenario where the offense is like a top five offense. Vic Fangio is now the defensive coordinator. Maybe it's a group that improves as the season goes on, kind of like what we saw with the Dolphins last year with Fangio, where they started off slow and then, you know, mid-November rolled around and you're like, this defense is playing well. And then they got kind of crushed by injuries there at the end. So I could talk myself into a scenario where they're Super Bowl contenders. And then I could talk myself into a scenario where the bottom falls out. I mean, it's no secret that Nick Sirianni is pretty much coaching for his job. And I don't know how you feel. Most of the time, it feels like in the NFL, when a coach is in that spot, it doesn't necessarily go great. I mean, there's a lot of pressure on you. You've worked so hard to get to that point, and now you feel like in Sirianni's case, unless you go to what it's probably the divisional round, I mean you wild card round, you're out. I don't know that he's back in 2025. Obviously there's a lot of circumstances depending on how the season went and how they would lose, but like that's kind of, it's hard to get to the divisional round. And so now you're looking at it at a situation where the power was stripped from the head coach. You brought in two coordinators, whether those were his guys or the organization's guys. You know, I think it's probably a little bit more the organization's guys. And so you're still not that talented on defense. You lost some guys there. Is it wise to spend $12.6 million on a running back? I mean, I almost always say no. And now people around Philadelphia are talking themselves into it. So it really could go either way. I think they might be the most high variance team in the NFL going into next season.
The Saquon Barkley thing was fascinating because I remember whenever I would do a mock draft, like last year, Bijan Robinson sure seems like it would fit. And Zach Berman, who used to work with us at The Athletic, he's like, they're never drafting running back, especially, you know, first round. I'm like, okay. And then they go out and get Barkley, who obviously is really good, but it's a little unusual. Was that just a case, you think, of, hey, look, Saquon Barkley's really good? Or do you think it was like, hey, we maybe need to take some more pressure off of Jalen Hurts? Because me, Ben, personally, I kind of wondered if they spent on him too quickly. Like, I wanted to see maybe a little bit. I get the timing was what it was, but like, I was like, I don't know. Is Jalen Hurts really one of the five best quarterbacks in the league? I don't know, but that's independent. How much do you think Barkley, though, was to take literal pressure off Hurts so it's not just about him? Because maybe there's at least a little bit of a question as to what he can do, how high he can take them.
Yeah, I'm still wrapping my head around it, to be quite. I agree with what, you know, Zach said, where it's just that this isn't typically what they've done. I mean, they had the best rushing offense in the NFL 2 years ago with Miles Sanders. If you just look at kind of the efficiency stats last year, they had a top five rushing offense with DeAndre Swift. Like, there's proof there that no, it's more about the scheme, the quarterback being a running threat, the offensive line, the blocking. And not to say you can plug anyone back there, but if you reach a certain threshold of talent, that your run game is going to be pretty good. So I do think it was out of character. You know, I wonder if they looked at the 49ers and said, wow, you know, they took a swing on Christian McCaffrey. And not to say Saquon Barkley is Christian McCaffrey, I don't think he is, but they look at that and say McCaffrey really took their offense to another level, where now they just look so unstoppable. And that's with Brock Purdy, you know, a rookie contract quarterback playing there, and they're just like an offensive juggernaut. Hey, maybe we should rethink this. It's not like, you know, setting the market at running back. It's paying him good money, but the cap spiked, and if he can be some version, maybe 75% of what McCaffrey is, then maybe that will add a new element to our offense. So I think it had more to do with the specific player. Like, I don't think they went into the offseason and were like, hey, we need to spend on a running back and take the pressure off Jalen Hurts. I think they probably, you know, have a few people who they look at and say, all right, this person actually will make a difference. And in their minds, they obviously thought Barkley was one of those guys. I personally am skeptical of it, just being honest. I mean, when a guy has had over 600 carries the previous two seasons, when a running back is entering his seventh season, I think it is, in the NFL, I mean, we just have a lot of examples that you're getting a guy with wear and tear, and they're typically going to show decline at some point in the very near future. It sucks, you know, but that's kind of how it just goes with running backs in the NFL.
And that's why it's so hard this league. 2 years ago, they're in the Super Bowl. Last year, they start 10-1. Everything falls apart. And now we're talking about a boomer bust season in which they went out and made a move that, again, Barkley's a really good player, but it seems to go against their norm, perhaps in part because, like you said, the head coach might be coaching for his job, and who knows what the pressure is anywhere else. This thing can go quickly, you know, in either direction. The Houston Texans went one way last year, the Eagles feeling it the other way. You mentioned Kellen Moore, the new OC. He's obviously replacing Brian Johnson, who's now here as part of that staff. I'm just curious, like, what was your thought about the decision to move on from Brian Johnson? And then I guess part two is, since he's likely going to get a rookie quarterback here, how does he help that player based on what you saw, how he helped Jalen Hurts?
Yeah, it was always tough because, you know, when you have an offensive-minded head coach and then you have an offensive coordinator and there are issues, it's just hard to know, well, all right, like you're trying to pin the blame. Well, how much blame goes here? How much blame goes there? I mean, like you said, they're coming off the Super Bowl. Brian Johnson looked like one of the brightest young offensive coaches in the NFL. They promote him from quarterbacks coach to offensive coordinator. Everyone had good things to say about him. And so I was happy that he got, I think he's what, associate head coach or assistant head coach there. Mm-hmm. Right. So I was happy that he got an opportunity there. I can't honestly give you a great, like, hey, he's going to be awesome, or what are they thinking? I mean, I can tell you that the Eagles offense absolutely underachieved last year, and it was in the same way over and over and over again, where teams would just blitz Jalen Hurts and they had no answers, and you're just looking at it going, how can this happen from 1 week to the next week, and then you don't solve it and it happens again to the next week? Now, maybe some of that's on Jalen Hurts, maybe some of it's on Nick Sirianni, maybe some of it's on Brian Johnson, but it didn't look good. So that was really the only, you know, season we have where Brian Johnson's calling the plays and you know, part of the offense. But to me, it wasn't necessarily the play calling that was an issue for the Eagles last year. It was kind of the design and the scheme and the stuff you do from, you know, Wednesday to Saturday. It wasn't just like he didn't have a great menu he was choosing from, and he was choosing, you know, the wrong stuff to order. It was like, no, this is a bad menu that you're choosing from. So that's why I wouldn't be surprised if he kind of, you know, his reputation is different a year, 2 years, 3 years from now.
I won't ask you about what you thought of Mariota in Philly, because there wasn't really anything to look at, but obviously he is part of the group here. So I am curious about what you think Washington did. I guess first, what were your expectations? They had the most cap space and 1,000 holes, and also knew everything from owner on down. I guess, what were your expectations for Washington going into free agency? And then what did you think of what they did so far?
Yeah, I mean, I knew, like, I have an exercise I do before free agency where I'm just looking at, like, who do I think are going to be the most active teams and who are the teams that really don't have a lot of flexibility or doesn't look like they're going to do much. And certainly the Commanders were a team I circled because they had so much cap space. You have a new regime, you have holes on the roster, you're prepping for a rookie quarterback to come in. And so I knew they were going to be active. I thought it was interesting the way they handled it. It wasn't like these monster swings, top of the market, go get, you know, the guys who are being paid the most money, who are going to steal the headlines. It was a lot of guys, which I know you know, I was just reading your most recent article today, which I think you said 18 guys, right, that they've signed so far in free agency, unless that was a couple days ago and they did something since then. But to me, it felt like, let's set the floor. And I think a lot of teams, smart teams, do this. Let's set the floor at a bunch of different spots where if we had to play a game like the Sunday before the draft, we don't feel great about everything, but we have like players who are okay, who have played before, and we can go out there and we can field a team. And now we can go into the draft and we're not saying, shoot, we have nobody here. We have no, like, you don't want the need to dictate where you're going with some of those picks, especially with their draft capital. Now, maybe at left tackle, we'll see. I guess that's, you know, the glaring hole that they got to figure out one way or the other. But I thought it was fine. You know, it wasn't exciting. I'm sure it wasn't like the kind of free agency where if you're a fan, you're like, oh yeah, let's go. You know, we're going to win the Super Bowl next year. But I thought the approach was fine. They have to be patient. They're going to have a rookie quarterback. They have a new coach. They have like every a new owner. Everything is new there. This isn't just next year you're going to be awesome right away. So you don't want to get stuck in bad situations. You don't want to have bad contracts on your books. And I thought the number of one-year deals they signed, that was smart. They got professionals, Bobby Wagner, Austin Eckler. These are guys who are like, all right, good locker room guys, professionals. They're not going to be part of your team probably when you're competing for a Super Bowl, but that's okay. They pass the torch on to other guys and they go from there. So that's kind of what stood out to me, was sort of the approach they took with how you spend all that money that you have when you have that cap space.
Yeah, as of today, they added Cornelius Lucas back today. So as of today, it's 20, including the re-signings. Of the 20, 16 are offense or defensive primarily, and of those, only 5 got more than a one-year deal. They are clearly trying to paper over holes, try to be more competitive, adult-like across the, you know, just have a better feeling with the snap, and then over time they'll get in there. The three guys that they did sign to bigger deals, Frankie Louvu from Carolina, Tyler Biotis, the center from Dallas, and then the defensive end Dorrance Armstrong from Dallas. I assume Louvu was probably the highest guy on your board. What did you think of him, and what did you think of that deal for Washington?
Yeah, he was out of there, guys. No doubt about it. I think it was 3 years, $31 million. I liked it. I thought it came in around where I thought he would come in as. You know, I was looking at, I think, Bobby Okereke to the Giants last year, I think, was one of the comps I had about that linebacker who's not top of the market, but is not going to be a bargain, kind of that middle ground. What does it look like? And I think he was 4 years, $40 million last offseason. So I was hoping that Louvu went to a defensive coordinator who would know how to use him, because I think he's really a unique player where I want him going forward. Like, he's not somebody I'm just going to be dropping back into coverage over and over again. Obviously you're going to do that a little bit, but you just want to cut him loose and say, go make a play. And he has shown really an ability to do that with the 12 and a half sacks over the last two seasons. And then I think he led all, I'm looking at my notes here. Led all off ball linebackers in tackles for loss over the past two seasons. So this is somebody who can make impact plays, who can be a playmaker at linebacker. You just have to use him the right way. And so I think Dan Quinn is a coach who probably one of the best things he did in Dallas. I mean, there are guys on that roster who were not like household names before, and he got them to play really important roles for some very good Cowboys defenses. So I think he'll find a way to do that with Frankie Louvu. And I thought that was a pretty good move.
Yeah, I think people are, you know, there's already been some good buzz on him, and people are getting to look at the tape for the first time and just seeing this guy fly all over the place and just like, whoa, what's going on here? And yeah, a lot of talk about, you know, Dan Quinn using him in the way they use Micah Parsons, which is to say here, there, and everywhere. And, you know, for a team that has the holes they have, they should have no issue plugging him in almost anywhere without disrupting too much. All right, so let's get to the quarterback thing here. I mentioned Mariota. So they signed him, you know, classic one-year mentor backup type. That's what he was for Philly. So they've also obviously traded Sam Howell. Curious what you thought of that. But at the moment, at least, you know, it's one thing for Mariota to back up Jalen Hurts, who's the starter. There's nothing to debate. Here, they're about to draft, we think, a quarterback at 2. And I am from the school, I'm sure my listeners are tired of me saying this, but I'm from the school that says, I'm letting this rookie sit as long as I possibly can. I think they need to develop. And, you know, I mean, J.J. McCarthy's 21. Should it be him? Jaden Daniels is a bit older, but Drake May also pretty young. So I think that makes sense. But except now Mariota is the guy. This isn't a hypothetical. It's Marcus Mariota. I think Mariota's fine for that backer ball. I don't know if I want him in there for like an extended period of time if I don't have to, but since you just went through the thought exercise last year of Mariota, and again, in a different way, what do you think of that? And then in sort of their room as a whole, again, no more Sam Howell, but a rookie's coming in.
Yeah, I'm not the biggest Mariota guy. You know, my co-host on Philly Special, or listeners will know that when the Eagles had him, I'm just, you know, there are some players who are just like, I don't love the experience of watching this guy. That's really all it is. I'm not saying he stinks or isn't worthy of a backup quarterback spot or anything like that. He can be a tough watch. He's going to take a lot of sacks. He's going to try to run around a lot, but then he'll take like these big hits. He's not one of these scramblers who is always getting down. You're kind of like, what are you doing, man? You've had injury issues. He'll fumble a lot. So there's a lot of negative plays with Marcus Mariota. And then accuracy, downfield accuracy, that stuff isn't always buttoned up. So I'm with you. You know, if he's your backup and he has to come in the middle of a game or for a couple games, fine. I would not want him to be the guy, you know, just kind of, hey, we're going to start him the first 8 games of the season until our rookie is ready. So that's kind of how I see that. You know, I thought Sam Howell had a little something to him. You know, we all have our preferences about who we like and who we don't like. And maybe it's because, Ben, I watched like those games against the Eagles last year on film very closely. And I'm like, holy cat, like he's carving them up. And so what I like about Howell is that he's talented and he can make the high degree of difficulty throws. Now, will it ever come? It might never come together because there's negatives. We know the sacks, the turnovers, all that stuff. But at least like I can see, hey, can he make those really high degree of difficulty throws? And the answer is yes. Now, for what they got back, it's what the equivalent of like a 4th round pick. I understand, you know, moving on. I mean, I really could have gone either way with that one. If they said, hey, we're going to keep him, he's a cheap backup, that's fine. But, you know, a 4th round pick, we know NFL general managers this time of year, it's like, oh, my 4th round pick, I'm going to draft the next, you know, all 10-year all pro. That's how they think this time of year, because they think they got the drafts all figured out. So I think that's fine. So it's tough for me. I can usually go either way with the rookie quarterback thing about, do you sit him? Do you play him? I really think it's based on the individual. Like, obviously you don't want to just throw a guy out there in bad circumstances and have them develop bad habits. I think, you know, that's not everything that happened with Bryce Young last year, but that's certainly part of it. I mean, he was lost his confidence and obviously played really poorly as a rookie. Now, if you feel like, hey, we've got a situation where it's okay and this person's very mature and you're seeing in OTAs and you're seeing in the summer, hey, they're picking up a lot of stuff, I'm not for sitting them for the sake of sitting them. I think as long as you're good with their confidence and you don't think they're going to develop bad habits, the best way to learn, in my opinion, is to kind of throw them out there and have those negative plays and get the mistakes out of their system. And you hope that by Thanksgiving, by December, by year two, that they're developing into something. So I really think it kind of depends on the player and the situation. I will say that Washington offensive line, I know they signed a couple offensive linemen. It does make me a little nervous. Like, I'll be honest, I didn't realize kind of until I was prepping for this podcast with you and I'm going through, I'm like, ooh, that doesn't look like the best situation for a rookie quarterback to come into, even though you got some wide receivers. So, you know, maybe it goes hand in hand with what they do in the draft with all those picks. Are they able to upgrade an offensive line and feel better about putting a rookie out there?
Yeah, I agree. I think that's part of it for sure. That what they have right now does not seem overly appealing, to say the least. What was I going to ask you? Yeah, I guess just overall, though, I mean, you know, I still think Washington is going to be a bottom team in the league, maybe not four wins and maybe not giving up 40-yard plays around the corner. I mean, if you took out those A.J. Brown games against Washington, I mean, his season wouldn't look nearly as good. He just destroyed them, which he wasn't the only one. But, like, I guess I do think, like, I like what they're trying to do. They're not trying to force it. They're setting themselves up. I think next year is when they get bold. Now you would have a draft. You know, people act like CJ Stroud came in and turned it around. Houston had 2 first-round picks and 2 second-round picks the prior year. They had already been bad for a while, so they were building it up. This is Washington's first attempt to do this. So I think in general, like, I'm pretty okay with what's going on. But, like, you know, for Adam Peters and Dan Quinn, I guess even just that, you liked Adam Peters, Dan Quinn, just the fact that they exist here now. Like, were you down with those moves?
Yeah, GMs, it's always so tough. It's just like I honestly don't. He seems fine. He comes obviously from an organization that did things well. What I hear about him, it's all positive, but you kind of never know until a guy gets in that seat and what moves they make. I thought Dan Quinn was worthy of a second chance. I really did. You know, I thought he obviously coached a team to a Super Bowl in Atlanta. I know he's very, very well liked by players. You know, when I covered the Seahawks for 2 seasons and just what people around the building said about Dan Quinn, and he had just left at that point. I mean, people loved the guy, like one of those people that everyone was just very high on. And I thought what he did in Dallas, kind of in his, you know, the next period of his career, like he wasn't just doing the same things defensively, schematically, that he was doing in Atlanta, that he was doing in Seattle. Like, I really did think he worked to adjust and say, all right, what can I learn from the rest of the league? Whether it's, hey, we're going to play a little bit more with those two high safeties, or we're going to play a little bit less cover three, which Seattle was known for. So I thought he adjusted well. And so, yeah, I thought that was like, I thought he was worthy, certainly, of a shot of getting another head coaching opportunity this offseason.
You rock, but people can't see, but Shiel has a bunch of NBA stuff going on in his background. You are a Sixers fan, correct?
I am, yes. Yeah.
Okay. So just to end this thing here, Josh, you know, we now have, of course, a mutual connection, right? Because Josh Harris owns both these things. Needless to say, for here, it could have been almost any human being on the planet that wasn't Dan Snyder, and people would have been happy. But nonetheless, Josh Harris is, you know, from the area, huge check mark, seems pretty smart, incredible, big check mark. I'm a big fan of the process, so for me, that was all fine. But, you know, you've lived this. The Sixers, obviously, Joel Embiid's hurt. They're kind of falling a bit down the standings. Where are you at with the Josh Harris experience? Have you, as a fan, enjoyed? Do you think he's been a good owner, or do you have a lot of questions because, whatever, that's what we do?
Yeah, it's probably like among Sixers fans, they're kind of like, you know, like take him or leave him. But I have heard from people who have like covered the NBA, and they're like, no, he is considered like an above average owner by NBA standards, by most people in the NBA. So like you said, after, you know, you just kind of want to avoid the Dan Snyder, you know, after that, like it gets into various things like, all right, does the owner spend money? Is the owner meddling? Is the owner not meddling? Do they want to win? Do they want, you know, so you get into all that stuff. But, you know, I don't have like a great sense of like, you know who the terrible owners are, you know? And then like, even the good owners, sometimes it's hard to say like, well, did you just luck into a great, like the Chiefs thing was pretty funny. The NFLPA, you know, survey, it's like, they're getting Fs like across the board.
Right.
Like, yeah, but you get Patrick Mahomes, and guess what? Not a lot of other stuff really matters. So that's kind of what the NFL comes down to. So I don't have too strong of an opinion. I think if Josh Harris, if they nail this pick at two with the quarterback, everyone will be like, Josh Harris, great owner. If they pick the wrong guy at number two, and you know, 2-3 years from now, they're looking for a quarterback again, Josh Harris, terrible owner. That's how it kind of goes in the NFL, I feel.
Well, and we have the same thing with here in town. Ted Leontis owns the Wizards and the Caps. Caps fans think he's amazing because they got Alex Ovechkin, and they basically, up until the last couple of years, have basically been a big winner, a big contender. They finally won one cup. They only made it past the second round one time, but the Caps fans don't want to hear that. The Wizards fan, they're like, oh my God, he's serious, this guy? He doesn't, terrible moves one after the other. He doesn't understand. He just wants to get the eighth seed. They don't tank. They finally tank after, but he gives Bradley Beal a no trade clause. Like, and they, it's the same guy, but completely different views of him because somewhat randomness. You know, one team got Ovechkin, one team got John Wall, who was good, but he wasn't one of the top 10 players of all time. What do you do?
Yeah, for what we do, it's not good to admit the role luck plays and all this stuff, but yeah. We're just speaking amongst friends here. Yeah, we can admit sometimes you get lucky, and that's all that matters. I mean, look at CJ Stroud. I mean, just such a like great example. I mean, the Texans were a laughing stock, and then, you know, they might have had, you know, I think there's been reports that they had Bryce Young one on their board, and then Bryce Young goes, and then they take CJ Stroud. And now guess who's going to probably, you never know, it's only been one season, but probably going to be in the mix here for the next 8 to 10 years because of that one little, you know, piece of luck that went their way. It's going to be the Texans. So yeah, that's kind of how it goes.
Shiel, you rock. Tell everybody where they can find you, read your stuff, listen to you, all that good stuff.
Yeah, if you go to the Ringer NFL show, we do a show twice a week, Ben Solak and I, called Extra Point Taken. And I think, I'm pretty sure on Friday's show, we're going to be talking about Washington quite a bit because we're doing a show where, hey, who are the teams we haven't talked about enough since free agency started? Let us know. And I think someone hit us up on the Commanders. So I think we'll talk about the Commanders there, but we talk about the NFL twice a week. And then if you want some, you know, enemy research on the Eagles, or if they have a bad stretch and you just want to bask in, you know, the misery of Eagles fans, then you can listen to the Ringer's Philly special and also read me at theringer.com.
I have friends who love listening to Philly radio after a bad during or after a bad stretch. It's amazing. Feel really appreciate it, my guy. You know your stuff on the free agency. That's why I wanted you on. Appreciate it. We'll talk. We'll see what happens, man.
All right. Thanks, Ben. Talk to you soon. Take care.